space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life, a new civilization, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Greetings, salutations, and welcome to Retrek. I'm Captain Jim. With me, of course, Sir Admiral Elliot.
Hi there.
And Dr. Squee.
Happy Dragon's Giving to the American friends.
Oh, is it today?
No, it's
tomorrow. It's
this
weekend. Okay.
It's tomorrow. It's always the fourth. It's the fourth Thursday in November. It's
I thought Wednesdays?
No, it's the fourth Thursday of November. Canadian Thanksgiving, because let's not forget our Canadian friends. Theirs was last month, so theirs was in October.
Okay, so anyone in America, if you're watching this on video, play this back to yourself tomorrow for my greeting. And if you're listening to it on audio, play it back about a week before.
And if you're in Canada, listen to it in 11 months.
Yes.
And happy Black Friday week to everyone, or Black Friday month, or whatever it is.
That time's just perfect, actually, for me.
It does for you.
I may do a shopping spree and ordering stuff Friday.
Unless you want to get the Lego Sanctum Sanctorum from Argos, because they've sold out. They couldn't wait for payday tomorrow. They had to sell out.
Now, I'm looking. I've got a washing machine, possibly a fridge freezer, and a big telly.
Well, the Sanctum Sanctorum has all those things, just in Lego form, but it's sold out everywhere.
Yeah, the big telly in my front room is going to become a little telly in my bedroom.
Excellent, as it should when you move house. So, we are here to talk about the latest episode of Lower Decks of Gods and Angels.
No, excuse me. No, it's not. It's of Gods and Dangles.
Angles.
Yeah.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Ah, I misread it. Oh, that's clever.
Before you
LES is angles.
Before you announce the other one which goes with it, I assume it's gonna be Tholians because they kept no, it was the gods. I told you big giant hand. Elliot gets them twice as often as me, so I have to celebrate twice as hard when I do get them.
Let's be fair. We haven't actually come up with are these responsible for the type these.
I said they'd be coming in. I didn't say they'd be responsible for everything. I say they'd be coming into it.
You did say coming in, and I will give you that. Well done. And I
fucking love the giant hand. I don't know why.
Yes, of course.
It's just an iconic image, isn't it?
It is. We're off back to the original series to see the big green hand. And how do you pronounce this? Who mourns? Is it Adonis? It's just written weirdly.
I was questioning myself on this.
So they've put an extra.
I think it's Adonis.
Adonis, but they've put an extra A in there, haven't they? For some reason,
it's the American spelling.
Is it? I thought they spelled it the same way.
Unless it's probably because it's old Greek or something. It's probably just some weird ones.
So the Adonis from the title. Are we assuming that's the god who's lonely, or is it double meaning with Scotty as well?
Maybe. I mean, we'll get there. But first, let's talk about Lower Decks, then, of Gods and Angles. That's a clever pun that went totally over my head.
Mine too, if I'm right.
I thought it was Angels.
The dyslexic one wasn't going to spot it. Let's just say that. So I was out.
I'll be honest here. I was calling it of Gods and Angels until I did the thumbnail, and I was spelling it, and then I thought, hold on, I always get these two wrong way round, which is it? Angles.
Well, that's clever. That's even. I like this episode even more now. Yes, so this episode is all about peace talks between the orbs and the cubes, who are basically energy life forms, and they hate each other.
And anyone old enough, it's going to give you memories of Terrorhawk straight away.
Yes.
I was thinking Playbus.
Two boys against each other.
I was thinking Playbus with the more square windows and the round. Every time they said the cubes, I kept on hearing cubes. I was like, what? The cubes? No, cubes, sorry.
Right, it took me to Terrorhawk straight away.
Well, they do mention Q at one point.
Yeah, and cube sounds so close to Q.
I thought. And I suppose it's It's almost a riff on Let That Be Your Last Battlefield, with the black on one side, white on the other side. It's just an arbitrary thing that's different between these two life forms. Yeah. We've got circles, we've got cubes.
Yeah.
Well, I think the beauty of this one is it's like, it's just, like you said, it's kind of boiling it down to the simplest form of like how petty it is. Whereas like with the black face, white face thing, I love the fact that that was the stinging set, because unless you're really eagle-eyed, you didn't notice that they're on different sides of their face, or you didn't notice that.
Yes,
which is really cool. I just love this, that it's like, you, all your disagreements are so dumb because they're just based on a shape, which points out how dumb ours are in the same way, like you say.
It's the most sort of direct way of just addressing bigotry of any kind, isn't it? Like,
whereas like in the original series, it's kind of like the only reason I point that out is in the original series they had to hide it because of the climate of the time, which fuck knows where we're going now. But now they can just sort of say it on Front Street, which is kind of just shows you kind of how things have changed.
Yeah. And we get the ensign, who's a demigod. Which is, from the title, admittedly, I misread the title. I was thinking, right, this is going to be who mourns for Adonis. And then as soon as this character turned, I think this is the easiest second episode that we've had to pick, possibly ever in Lower Decks, because it was just right there.
To the point where I forgot the message, I just watched it.
Yeah.
The message saying, which one are we watching?
I could think of quite a few episodes that we could have done if we had covered that previously.
Yeah.
But with the green hand that they put into the titles this season, it was like, no, you've just got to go there.
Yeah. And so there's a bit where they're having to remove like all the curves from the ship because the cubes are offended by it.
Yeah.
And then
the cubes are offended by Article 10. Why? Because the zero's too round.
Yes, exactly.
And it's very nice to come in through Ransom on this one, because where we are showing a lot of character development, and I think also bringing in characters who maybe are kind of guest stars, get a bit more, like, so we got the bird doctor psychiatrist guy last week.
Yeah.
We have this week, we've got Ransom doing the log and everything, even though he's not part of the episode. It's like, it's... they've slowly evolved his character to give him that more empathetic side, even though he's very vain. He's there for a reason. And this is a really great highlight. Like, just him doing the grunt work and getting pissed off with it, which we've not seen from him before, which is a nice little extra shade to throw in there.
Yeah, and it felt like in the early movements of the episode, I was like, oh, is this going to be an out-and-out Ransom episode? Because like you say, it did present him as the focal point of it all. But...
And like, we've seen him take Mariner under his wing, and not when she's been hard work. But now we see someone that is like, no, I cannot deal with her. And you're thinking straight away, Christ, how bad is she?
It was just such a nice setup to have, like, really highlight how everyone's given up on it. Like, they're the last people giving up on her before she gets in the way.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Mariner comes in. It was just nicely done.
Yeah, it was. It was, and it, this idea of, you know, Mariner's going to try and do for her what the rest of the crew did for Mariner. And obviously, ultimately, we get the payoff. It's that she's hiding these powers, and that's why she's blowing everything up. But I suppose almost shades of Barclay when he first comes into TNG, the way they're all like, he's a bit...
But it's nice that it's the first time, you know, like I said the other week, it's just nice to have Mariner having this extra shade after showing her do the same thing in the same situations a lot. Now we're kind of seeing more and more of her being kind of in the mentor role and trying to do well in her job and everything like that. So when the others have given up and Mariner steps forward, it really is. It's great that Ransom, I think, very like a sort of proud dad or proud mentor moment. He kind of like, yeah, that's a great, we should give her a chance. And like, he doesn't say it, but you get the feeling he's so proud of Mariner.
He's proud of Mariner for doing
that. Yeah, exactly. And yeah, we find out she's descended from Zeus, with not Apollo. Like, it was actually shouted out there, it's Zeus, which... I know I always go on about how they should just make a series of the New Frontier books, but one of the characters in New Frontier is a descendant of Apollo and the lieutenant from the episode we're about to cover.
Right.
And I feel like this is close enough to that, that they've definitely read them books, because it's... I mean, he doesn't have the laurel in New Frontiers. You don't find out his heritage until much later in the series. Think, it would have I given think, it away earlier.
I think with all the Easter eggs we've had over five seasons of Lower Decks, everyone involved in writing it has watched and read nearly everything.
Yes,
read.
I think
we're not,
so.
We're not, we haven't got a case of J.J. Abrams. No, I've never watched Star Trek, but it's, I'm going to direct the movie anyway.
Hey, come on. They had the big
job.
They had the big green hand in the closing credits to one of the modern Trek films.
He did better than, wasn't it, Stuart Beard, who did Nemesis and hadn't watched it and was shitty to work with by all accounts. Whereas Abrams, I've heard nothing but good things. I like the end result better, you know?
Yeah. I think the point is that they've gone to people who've watched.
Yeah.
Who knowledge of everything of the whole, not just on screen universe, but the whole extended and that's my point, that they've got people who actually love the subject matter, and they're not coming in, find out this and let's find that. They know what they're on about straight away.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the B plot really sort of revolves around Boimler, and it turns out that he's not being subtle at all reading this alternate universe path. Everyone knows that he's been reading this
path. What I love about this is you've got Tendi and Rutherford have noticed that it's 3.9 millimetres thicker than a normal pad, not the fact that it's a different colour. It's just this. No, it's 3.9 millimeters thicker.
I am liking it now that Boimler. I love that it's Beard's in a little bit more now. Like, I mean, just it was starting to do my head and just seeing those little bits of stubble. It's nicer now. It's, you know,
it's getting. I think it'll be a full beard next week because we're out of Movember. So, actually, the episode drops. Still drops tomorrow. So yeah, next week it won't be a full beard yet, and then the week after it'll be full beard because we're out of November.
For the whole fiver I put on the line towards ADHD UK, I think I said, if it's a moustache tomorrow and then a beard the other week, then charity wins.
There we go.
If it's a full beard tomorrow, I'll probably just send the fiver anyway, because, you know, otherwise I'll look like a dick and it's a fiver.
No, you set the rules. You don't make you look like a dick. Makes you look like someone who sticks to their word.
And doesn't give money to charity,
Exactly.
And give the money and then take it back.
Yeah, get them to pay you for it.
or be like the incoming president of America and just say you're giving money to charity and then have several exposés showing that every time you say that in an interview or on a TV show, you don't actually pay the money.
Yeah, I mean, I would not dare to cast aspersions on such a...
Oh, look, the war he's set on his own people, it'll take him ages to get to me.
That's true, actually, yeah. Anyway,
I think he might watch us every week, actually. I can see him now, he's on Truth Social.
That's it. We're not subscribed, that's why we can't see what he's saying.
He's adding to his list, he's going, right, all the immigrants out of the country, woke out of the country, journalists out of the country.
We're not allowing
some guys I met out of the country, then it's retrick under that. So he's got quite a lot to get through.
We got quite a way. He'll have us taken off Truth Social, you know. So we always stream directly to Truth Social every week. If you're listening on Truth Social and we're not there next week, come over to Facebook or Twitch or YouTube. And you'll be able to find us
no longer on Twitter.
We're not, no. Okay, so basically, Boimler's quest this week is he wants Dr. Tanner to give him a nickname because old Boimler had a nickname. Yeah, that's his little quest. Meanwhile, we get a bit of a mystery, which is they find this trashed room and one of the cubes is missing.
One of the cube children.
One of the cube missing. Children, sorry, now, is missing.
Now, it sounds like one of our dinosaurs is missing. One of our cubes is missing.
Now,
yeah.
Hands up who worked out what had gone on here straight away.
I didn't actually, no.
Yeah, I was straight away, oh, this is fairly obvious.
Yeah, I didn't get it, I've got to admit.
Yeah, yeah. I was straight away, like, oh, one of the kids has gone missing. Yeah. It just seemed very obvious with the peace talks going on.
I thought it was going to be the Iconians, but no, I think yeah, you...
We could have done Journey to Babel if it had just been a murder.
Oh, we could have done, yeah. Yeah, so there's a good bit where Mariner sort of asks about the Laurel. And they're like, so Laura, we don't like to talk about it. Like, what? Is it stuck to your head and all that? That's good fun. The idea that that's somehow part of their body.
That shouldn't really bother anyone because...
No, it shouldn't.
Part of the whole thing of Star Trek is... And I'm sure this was a piss take a bit why they had the Laurel could be part of them. But the whole thing is that everyone is human, apart from they've got a different nose or eyebrows or ears or a couple of ridges here or there. And it's obviously, yeah, well, why can't you have a Laurel? But they shouldn't have been shocked by that.
No, they shouldn't have been. I think it's maybe because demigods are quite uncommon, maybe. And there's that bit almost sort of a bit of a jab at political correctness story. It's like, we don't use the term demigod anymore, like, as if that's an old, politically incorrect term to
maybe
use.
Maybe it's because they don't have religion anymore.
Which
is odd, because in the original series, in the episode we're going to come to, Kirk does mention that there's only one god.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, we'll talk about it when we get there.
Yeah, but... because, they're usually really careful... It strikes me as like where they weren't quite as worried about being anal about it. I think it's just a writer has put that they meant to change it to great bird of the galaxy is the phrase they usually use. And they just haven't spotted it because they just they weren't as worried about canon back then. On
the word, the canon only sort of came into being once we got to TOS. Sorry.
Oh, I just meant in TV in general, but yeah.
They weren't as bothered
that we got into.
And also, there was 1960s standards and practices. It wouldn't surprise me if there was a network note saying you can't say there's no religion at all in the future. Christianity will, of course, still be in the future. Because there's that other episode, isn't it? Is it the apple or is it... I can't... It's one of them. I think it's season two where... All the way through, they're talking about the sun, and they think they mean as in the sun in the sky, and they say, no, it's the Son of God, it's Jesus they're worshipping.
That's the episode that they use in the autobiography of Captain Kirk for the planet that they go back to that statue. Making movies of them, and that's how they get Star Trek V out of continuity, that it's just the movie they watched on that planet. Bread and circuses, yeah.
Because I remember they said that they couldn't say there was no religion. They couldn't say there was no hell below us. They couldn't say above us only sky. Just imagine.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. Yeah. So yes, what else happens? Oh, when Ali decides. Yeah, it must be the orbs that are doing it, and they interrogate an orb, and it's like, oh, we need to. Mariner's like, we need to go easy here, you know. But it's like, tell us what you done with the cube.
It was when like Mariner's going in, it's like he goes, oh, I'm not fluorescent or glowing or whatever.
He goes, must have been training.
Is that bad? yes, of course it's bad. It's like, and then he refers back to her and goes like, my God, and you burst in here when I'm not like fully radiant. And she goes,
yeah,
I get that's a bad thing, but I'm not sure why, but let's go with it.
Yeah. And yeah, we find out, this is where we find out an orb is missing as well. And I think, yeah, this was probably the point that I realized what was going on.
Because I was wondering at some point if it was going to be that everyone was going to think that she needed to be banished or kind of sort of sent away. Mariner really tries, and then it turns out something else was her better destiny. But it was kind of like, yeah, that was my only kind of other thing I thought it might have been.
Yeah, it could have been. So the orbs and cubes start shooting at each other. And it ends up with this bit where they start like coalescing, and there's a good joke where they say like they're joining together, they could be turning into any shape, and it's like, no, it's a big orb and a big cube.
They have no imagination.
Yes.
And yeah, so Ensign Ali,
it's just before there where Ensign Ali sort of reveals that she has got powers, and she tries sucking all the energy out of them, but she can't hold it. And that's where we get Boimler gets a lightning bolt stuck up his ass.
Yes.
Yep. She completely fails to suck them off.
And that, yes.
With the machine, what I don't know what the giggling's about.
And that that dovetails nicely into the Tana subplot, because she surgically removes the lightning bolt from his ass. And this ultimately leads to them bonding, and he gets invited to the book club.
Because it's got to be in a journal.
Yeah. So the missing orbs and cubes return, and they've had a baby, which is like half orb, half cube.
I was just going to say, with the subplot with the doctor, I did just love the bit where he kind of goes like, right, she tells everyone to go fuck themselves. I know. Yeah. It's like, that character's so wonderful, because when she goes feral, she literally goes feral. It's just,
get a scratching in it. Yeah, it's brilliant.
The way they did that, I think, like, some of the characters, I think they've kind of, most of them they got straight from the get-go. I think a few of them, like, they had the kind of engineer who was this sex god guy. I think that was a bit overplayed to begin with. They had to find the thing. Her character is perfect. It's just a silly, funny character. Can have its serious moments, but you can just have so much fun with that, and it still feels, it doesn't rub up against it being Star Trek.
Yeah.
No, you're right. So this leads to peace and everything between the orbs and the cubes. It's all fairly quickly resolved. And Ali gets a night in the brig, which obviously sort of reflects when Mariners had to do that.
Yeah, I like that, like there. Ali helped solve all this, and she's feeling really good, and going, yeah, you still have to brig.
Yeah.
And then Mariner just being supported by antagonizing her is just perfectly Mariner. It's just like, she's still doing it her way.
Yeah, I'm coming to, it's lovely night, sick brig. I'm coming down with you. No, get out. This is my brig.
So the Laurel thing, does that come off? Does it like, oh, something, you know, she asks her, just keeps on peppering her with questions.
And yeah, like they have the nice conversation about Q. And it's Q's not dangerous, it's just annoying.
Yeah.
And there was we've talked about these a couple of times this series, where they reference episode names and things like that, and sometimes it's hard to justify in-universe how they can do that. And there's a reference here. Now, it's either to Ronald D. Moore, the writer, or to Ronald B. Moore, the special effects guy, who, Dr. Squee, I believe you interviewed him at one
I was going to say, I was hoping it's Ronald B. Moore, but I think it's D, he says. And that's because he's talking about writing as well, which is... Ronald B. Moore. I mean, because for a second, when I first said it, I go, did he just, first of all, who makes a Ronald B. Moore reference? If they had done that, I would have had to put on several hats to have taken off to them, because it's such an obscure reference that I would have loved it. But also, someone I'd interview would have just given me palpitations to be referenced on there. But yeah, it's definitely Ronald D. Moore, I think. And yeah, it's But like, there is no excuse why that isn't fourth wall breaking at this stage, though, I don't think. Unless
you could say
it's referring to his other work, but it's a stretch.
Yeah, you could have, okay, in the Star Trek universe, there probably is someone called Ronald D. Moore who, you know, could be a famous author. But because we've not established that, it is just a wink to the audience no contextualization whatsoever.
Yeah, if after that he'd said, oh, because I'm great Battlestar Galactica, you know, if he'd made it about something, you know, like a bait and switch. But I think in this series, like every other series, I think we've talked about them all, like every other reference, you could kind of get away with justifying. This series, they've just gone out and out, fourth wall breaking. It's just, they're just having fun with it. Fine.
Again, no reference to the weird spatial anomalies again.
Which is quite normal for Lower Decks, actually, when you think
about
it, that we often have this where, because we're used to it now, we've taken note of what the anomaly was and what seems to be the big season arc. And then they go off and you don't mention it at all. And they do that.
They do.
Lower Decks has done that. Yeah. And then I think it's become more noticeable, the season arc now.
I think maybe previously, but I could be wrong. I think there's usually not, they've got a few episodes in a row without even mentioning it at all. And I think usually one of them would have had a bleak reference.
Something.
You know, in previous series. But this time they're just doing a couple of things, which is fine. And like might even feed into it later. I mean, I reckon the fact that we've got a god on our team now and it's time travel, I think that might kind of...
Maybe that might up factor later, in, you know.
So I think we're probably gathering up pieces in these bits, which are going to
play
finale.
Yeah,
it wasn't mentioning the main plot.
This is where, like, final seasons, I think, when you know it's the final season going in, can be quite exciting because, you know, the gloves are off. You can do what you want narratively and you get to enjoy these characters again. But then they introduce someone like Ensign Ali and you think, oh, we're only going to get 5 episodes of her. If that, you know, this could be a fun character to revisit. So it does get tinged with a bit of sadness when you introduce cool new ideas
I wonder if they're still playing on the hope that like what's happened with a lot of other animated shows, like we'll be back in a year or two, that
will realize which it may well be.
I think the movie thing is going to happen. I reckon it's going to be a few movies a year, or you know, like
we'll get something. Yeah,
I think we'll get more Lower Decks. I'd be really surprised if we don't get more Lower Decks.
I don't think we've seen the last.
And it's so much easier to do more Lower Decks than any of the other shows because it's animated. You're not having to rebuild expensive sets that you've dismantled and.
Don't even necessarily need the cast. Like, I think they prefer it, but you don't necessarily even need the cast in at the same time. You can record kind of bits separately if you need to.
Well it doesn't matter if they get old and all that. You can do this for 40, 50 years and they can look the same still.
Yeah, but if someone's busy, like if the schedules don't work out for everyone, you can record some separately, you know.
How they did the first season, wasn't it? Because it was lockdown. They all recorded independently.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not uncommon that you do that anyway with animated. Most of the time people do just record their part and they don't always have something to play off. But yeah, I don't think we've seen the last, but we have got a few episodes left, which we will cover on the podcast. Back to the original series then for Who Mourns for Adonis.
This one.
Episode 2 of season 2 as broadcast, but it was actually a little bit later. Yeah,
production. A mistake with how I put it on because I normally do them in viewing order. I list them in our description, but I've made a mistake. I got it off a different site than normal.
Yeah, doesn't it matter?
I just love the fact this episode. I never watched Mad Men all the way through. I saw a few episodes, but it's like it really is like we know in the original series you can have these moments which maybe jar with current sensibilities. This whole episode feels like it was written by the Mad Men caster, kind of like have been casting the episode this week. It's just it's out and out blatantly sexist all the way.
I mean,
there's very little defense on this one.
We've often said that when...
I think this did something really progressive for the time. I know it's massively sexist, but the part where we have Uhura doing the engineering work...
Yes,
in the
that's true.
Although she has a hair up funny, I feel like that's a kind of like... It's almost like a woman with curlers in her hair.
But yeah, having Uhura actually do something and then being like, no, you are the person for this job.
Yeah.
I agree. Maybe they just put that in to temper the rest of it. Because, yeah, we've often said when we go back to the original series that a lot of things are very progressive, but what dates it is the portrayal and the attitude towards women at times.
Yeah.
And, yeah, there's some clangers in this episode.
I almost feel like, though, in other episodes where it's like, good point about the engineer. I do like that. I like that you're highlighting that. However, in most episodes, it's more like they are trying to be progressive, but they don't see their own biases sometimes. Whereas this one feels more like a guest writer's come on who didn't get that memo and just gone straight for, like, every bias he's got is on show here. Do you see what I mean? It's like Roddenberry was trying to aim towards women empowerment, but I think maybe he missed some of his own shit, basically.
Yeah, I think it's...
I think he was his heart was in the right place. Maybe he just got some things wrong. Which
I think,
it's a funny one because you have... It is jarring some of how they treat the lieutenant. I can't remember her name. But you have stuff like... With Scott, like Bones talking to Kirk about Scotty fancies her, and he's going, when a man of a certain age, and I think he's into her, but I think he's too old, she's not really there.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, just talking like she's property, like just straight up.
Yeah.
That right from the beginning, the conversation, I think, starts with Kirk and McCoy basically, ends with them going, it's like, yeah, I'm going to lose an officer because as soon as she's married, that's her out of Starfleet. It's like, whoa.
Yeah.
That was such a clanger.
It's like Scotty's clearly hitting on this woman. And then it's just Kirk and Bones just being like gossipy, like, oh, you see what Scotty's up to?
Like Kirk even tries to, it almost feels like at one stage, Kirk tries to give McCoy an out before just joining him and goes, like, come on, Scotty's a fine man. It's like, oh no, he's a fine man, but he hasn't got a chance with her. It's like, oh,
the thing is, like, there's Kirk there, but so you've got these two there chatting, and the point is with Kirk, he's looking at Scotty sitting on this last. So obviously they're going to get married because that's what happens anytime you hit on the last.
Yeah.
How many wives does Kirk have based on this week? Because we've seen how many lasses he's hit on and got off with. Has he got like a string of wives? Is he like, is it old Paul from a... Oh, the Mighty Boosh.
Oh, I'm not sure. I never really wives, watched it.
Be one of my wives.
I mean, it could, yeah, it's, yes, it's not great. But it's interrupted by the big green hand, so...
Out of nowhere.
I mean, I'm just going to put this out there now, though, before we get to the green hand, because you know how much I love the green hand. But... I just don't like my man Scotty. Every time Scotty gets a love interest, they always shit on him. Like, just have one where he just actually gets off with a bird.
Oh, no, come bird. On.
Sorry, I stepped into that moment for a second. Sorry, I withdraw the current bird, but I just went into the 60s,
okay.
80s.
Look.
Hold on, we have Scotty gets off with someone, Uhura in Star Trek V.
Yeah, the movies, they got a bit better. Yeah. But, you know, I'm just saying, the TV show, he got shit on with
look,
me.
Look, no, we have one. We have one where Scotty got off with someone and then he got possessed by Jack the Ripper and murdered her.
Yeah,
it kind of didn't work out for him, though, I would still say.
It didn't work out for him, but up until he got possessed by Jack the Ripper and murdered her, it was going fine.
Yeah. It was just that one thing, and she never let him live it down either. Well, of course, she was dead, but like that's not the point.
What's the episode where they go... Oh, Scotty hates all women at the minute because a woman spilled his coffee or so. Is that? I think that's the Jack the Ripper one, isn't it?
Is it actually Scotty doing this?
Yeah, it could be Scotty because he's pretty pissed off with women at the minute. He might be murdering her.
I mean, Kirk never fails to pull the woman. Even Spock, has women throwing themselves at
Spock
for him to not notice. And then you got poor Scotty every time, just never works anyway. Sorry, Green Hand.
It's because he's a man of a certain age, is Scotty at this point.
They love bring that up as well. It's like, for fuck's sake, he's only like 40. With the giant hand, can I ask? Do we think what they've done here, it looks like they might have touched up the effect, but kept very true to the original. I really like
the ones on Paramount. Yeah. Yes, they have.
Yeah.
If you look at my thumbnail that I did for this episode, I've actually used the original effect, because on the original effect, it's just with a black space and some stars. On the touched up one, it's got a planet as well in there, so the object is a planet.
No, I just give them. It's like, I really wish that they'd do more of this with the kind of like a res of keeping it true to the original effect, just made it slightly look a bit better on the screen as opposed to when they try and redo them and it always just looks bad. It doesn't look like it belongs.
Like, the annoying thing is that they redid all the Enterprise in the remastered.
Mm.
But a lot of it they have tried to keep true, but unfortunately it's starting to
get
very dated, some of it.
I think it's him. Like, some of them they have. There's a decent number where they haven't. Like, Amok Time's always my prime example because they go to this brand new effect they've done in the sky, which just doesn't look there. And they show like they're looking down on the arena where they're going to fight. And then when they go, it's completely different. It takes you straight out of it, or it does me anyway. I just thought this was a really nice job. The green hand is always just so striking. It's great.
On the new one, it's crisper.
Yeah.
And it's got the planet, but they have actually kept it quite accurate to what the original
it's decent.
Was.
And this is so iconic, I think it would be a crime to have strayed away from it. It just looks great.
Yeah. And
that's why I used the original.
And rightly so. So, we get the big green hand. They can't escape from the big green hand. And then the gentleman we learn shortly is Apollo, appears on the screen. And this is why I love...
Oh, here's an interesting question.
Go on.
Does this predate Stan Lee coming up with the Hulk?
I have no idea.
Because we've got the green hand crushing.
Oh, good point. I'm not sure when the Hulk was invented. It'll have been, probably Hulk. 60s.
It was 52, so it predates it by 4 years.
What, Hulk predates? So,
yeah, Hulk 62 was the Hulk.
Right. Ah, there we go. 66.
Okay, I will.
Seven by now.
We'll let Stanley off then.
I will let Stanley off.
But this is why I love how batshit crazy the original series could be. It's just, there you go, there's a Greek god on the screen. Off we go. We're off to the races. And, I know they do stuff like this now and again in the other ones, but the original series was a lot looser with how much it had just throw stuff like this in.
There was very much, you had the early days of, like, you Pulp Fiction with sci-fi and all that.
Yeah.
Maybe not early days, maybe 20, 30 years in by now, but you still got a lot of new ideas coming out. Where
and
nowadays,
Roddenberry,
there's very few new ideas.
Roddenberry had a bit of a fixation with gods and how we perceive gods and things like that anyway, so that, you can feel his fingerprints on this.
I'd also give them a lot of credit. The nice thing about this is you do get these kind of shock moments in the opening seconds. It like you get a little character moment, then you get something big to draw you into the episode. It's really dynamic. I think where Next Generation kind of like perhaps overcompensated for that by putting so much development, sometimes the start of the episodes, it took its time to get to the meat of it. Whereas it's really nice about these that get straight into the action. I'd say maybe the fault of some of the original series ones is they get into the action so quickly that later on when they then like have 50-minute episodes.
Yeah, 50 minutes to fill.
Yeah, they sometimes struggle a bit later on, but their dynamic opens were always really good for that.
Yeah, I think in terms of the poor quality opening teasers, I think Voyager and Enterprise suffered the most from it, because you'd have episodes where, like, Voyager, and it just be Tom Paris is walking around. He goes to the galley. He goes, Neelix, what are you cooking tonight? Oh, I'm doing a fish stew. And then credits come up, and you think, why do you think I'm going to stay watching this episode? Like,
you've not hooked me.
Yeah, it's,
you didn't even give me right. The recipe.
The original series, it's always something happens and it goes dun dun dun, and you get a reaction shot, and yeah,
it's a lovely way of getting into the episodes.
And yeah. I love how so this Greek god appears on the screen, and Kirk straight away just starts giving him shit. He's like, now listen, mister, we don't need a history lesson from you. You let my ship go.
Yeah, I've taken the wind out of your sails.
Yeah.
And I love the guy who's playing. Like, this is, I always speak about character actors. And in the original series, these massive performance by some of these guys. This guy is going very big right from the beginning.
Well, he's a god, and he wants people to worship
him. Every bit
of
furniture.
A lot of them are theatre actors as well, though. Most of the time.
Yeah. A lot of them predated TV. You know.
A lot of them started on theatre, and a lot of them who are just character actors at this time, to make the bread and butter to survive all year, they're in the theatre, so they're used to projecting the voice, so they do have these amazing voices that they come out with.
Yeah.
And they agree eventually we'll go down to the planet and talk to
Spock.
Apollo. Yes, but not Spock. It reminds me of Pan.
and Spock, of course, there is like, no, I'm not offended. Fuck that guy.
Yeah, and he wants to be worshipped. And in order to scare them into worshipping him, he gets very tall. Which, okay, the effect's not great, but it's pretty cool. And again, it's that madness that you wouldn't necessarily have in the later shows. But TOS,
it's not, that hasn't been altered, though, I don't think, has it?
No, I don't think so.
All. I think they've kept, I actually think they have kept quite a lot of the effects in this.
Yeah, because they could have done better with that if they touched it up. Yeah, they could have done better.
And I know we're seeing them from the back, but I also find it really great when you go to the big version of him and they're stood there. Whenever they do something like this and they've got to be reacting to something that isn't there, back then they just used to go, I think they just used to go, right, just stand there, it's fine, right, we'll just film you stand there, great, okay, that's it. Because there's no like you can tell by some stature how they're reacting,
yeah,
and they're not reacting to it at all, which is just hilarious. They always did this. It's like they're just then it's fine. Yeah. We can't see your faces, no one will notice that you're not reacting.
And then someone really clever came up with I'm gonna put a tennis ball on a stick and you all look at this,
yeah,
and they were like, that is the greatest innovation in special effects.
They're looking at his kneecaps, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kirk's, we're not going to bow to you. And then Apollo starts hitting on Carolyn, the lieutenant, and Scotty starts getting all, hey, don't know you be hitting on her. Bastard.
Whereas Kirk's like, hey, Scotty, chill out. Just let him have his way. It's only a female crew member. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, and then, yes, this is where we get stuff that isn't good in terms of representation of women. Because you get the god going, I'm going to dress her up in a nice dress. And it's, I think it's one of the dresses from Mud's Women. I've definitely seen this dress before.
But he does use, like, the Greek thing. It's like your arm should be bare.
Yes, he does.
Your bow arm should not be covered, which is actually a great thing.
But it's the fact that the Starfleet officer, instead of going, "How dare you?" She goes, "Oh, actually, it's quite nice, isn't it? I like this."
Every time in the original series, as soon as there's a female officer who's being used by the bad guy or being womanized by the, you know, wooed by the bad guy, whatever you like to call it, like in a very, very sexist way, they're always like, "Of course I'll go off. Pretty dress time." It's very cringy.
And Kirk does, he gives Scotty a bit of a bollock. And this is quite good because he goes, "Look, she's a Starfleet lieutenant. She's going to be doing a job. She'll get close to him so that she can use that against him." And I thought that's probably the most progressive thing in the episode, that Kirk's like, it's undermined completely by the fact that she doesn't really do that, but
the
fact that Kirk has confidence in his female officer that she will. And then he also, they've obviously gone, right, what's we want Kirk to insult Scotty. What's the Scottish thing? A thistle. Because Kirk calls Scotty a thistle head.
It's like right, what sounds like an insult a Scottish person would use that Kirk's picked up on? Thistlehead. Yep, good enough.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, you know,
there's some actual Scottish people we could ask. Nah, thistlehead's good enough.
We're gonna have a Canadian playing an American, calling a Canadian who's playing a Scotsman a thistlehead. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
To be fair, they might have asked Scottish people and gone, "Yep, we can't use them words on network TV in the 60s, so we'll have to make one of us own up, I'm afraid."
This is true.
Actually, the three of us have to be thankful that it did end up being a Scottish character, because the other pitch which James Doohan made, which you guys might know, was an English accent.
Oh, can you imagine?
And we would have been like, "Oh, Bambershoots and stuff." Like, that would have been
It'll have just been Malcolm Reed. It can't have been worse.
Well, no, but he was British. Like, that is his voice, more or less.
It's not.
He does talk a bit like that.
No.
He's got quite a posh voice.
Anyway.
I knew Dominic came from TV shows before this, and he wasn't a million miles away. I'm sorry for our Scottish friends who are watching. It's like, I'm sorry you had to dive on that grenade, so we didn't have to.
Yeah, but look, it's taken 60 years, but there is a Scottish actor playing Scotty now.
Yeah, it was like 10.
Yeah,
just the age is wrong. Sorry, that's
no. Terrible. He's a man of a certain age.
Well, that's my point. He was older than the rest of the cast.
Or did he just look it? I think DeForest Kelly looked it. I think DeForest Kelly was the oldest.
Actually the oldest. Apart from
Spock. DeForest Kelly was. But with
that's different.
With Scotty, they do refer to, like you were saying, man of certain, like, they're always referring to the fact that he's older than he's 40, I think, roughly, and you've got Kirk is 25 and
Kirk's in his 20s, so Scotty's probably in his 30s.
I thought he was more in his 40s, because I think the others are more like early 30s, and I always had Scotty as about 40.
Yeah, Scotty's a bit, it's like, "Oh, Scotty, we'll let you do one more mission, then we're just going to have you put down because you're that old."
Well, yeah, and the thing was, back then, it's like, it was seen as, like, 10 years was seen as more younger than it is now. So now people are more active for longer. So it's like, someone in your 40s wouldn't even blink at that if you're in your 30s. But then that was like, "Oh my God, you're 40. You're close to retirement, you are."
So speaking of age, then the young character, Chekhov, who's about 3 in these. This is where they were doing that thing where he kept making up stuff about Russian culture. And there's a bit where they talk about the Cheshire Cat, and he goes, no, it was the Minsk Cat, the Minsk Cat. It's just brilliant.
Yeah, they do a reference to his age here as well, because I'm sure he goes like, I could go and see how she is. It's like, how old are you?
22.
It's like, he's 22, and it's like, you're 22. You're not going anywhere near her.
you can't. That's awful. And it's like, you can't handle this woman. Let me do it. Oh,
No. She's a Starfleet officer. She's a lieutenant. Hey, I could go and help her. It's like, no, you're too horny. I'm going over. You're never horny, of course, Kirk.
And they do have this interesting discussion where they, they come up with the theory that, you know, it was probably that they're an advanced alien and they may have visited Earth and been mistaken for gods. And I like, you know, it's fairly standard stuff now. But it's a cool sci-fi idea, and I like how it's dealt with and everything.
And I like that the scan that he has got an extra organ to do things, to channel
and that's just his bonus penis that we're talking about then.
Well, ask Lieutenant Caroline.
Which fits into what we see with, is it Ensign Alley?
Yeah. The other deck.
But she's channeling energy.
She's channeling the energy, yeah.
She's creating energy. She's channeling. This alien, because of that, have learned how to channel it.
Yeah, and that was always the thing in the original series. Like, they were never out-and-out magic. They always had a computer or something. That, like, even with Trelane, who everyone said, well, he's kind of like a Q. And it's like, yeah, but Qs have innate power, whereas Trelane had a special computer that did it, you know.
Yeah.
And also, it's a very kind of old idea going back at least to Lord of the Rings, and then it goes forward to Batman 5 past this, this idea of, like, these gods who were once there who've moved beyond the veil, and there's one left, or there's a few left in there.
Yeah.
You know,
yes.
Gilder races and
yeah, so it's an excuse why they're not. We don't see them much, but we've seen this one because they used to rule this. You know, the universe.
And then Lieutenant Caroline messes the plan up because they've got the plan. He expends the energy. Let's wind him up. But she asks him for mercy, and it's fuck's sake, we're gonna get away with that
because our lieutenant did a job and saved us,
yeah. And then he's saying, right, you're all gonna leave the ship, you're all gonna come and stay on my planet and worship me. Was he gonna leave Spock up there actually? You know, because he talks about you'll all come down and I'll crush the ship and get rid of it.
I know we mentioned about the Uhura bit, you know, her being an engine, you know, sorry, yeah, the engine. Just a lovely little Spock bit. I don't know which the writer is or kind of what is his or her history of Star Trek is. But one thing which I thought was nice, it was like, because this is season two, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
So you've kind of got that little bit of development on Spock, which kind of goes back and forth a bit because it wasn't always consistent. But it's nice that he's going, it's like, well, you got to get this done. And when Uhura goes, look, I'm working my ass off here. He goes,
and he's still a good work.
But he says, but I can think of no one finer to do it. It's just a really nice, like,
yeah exactly.
You feel like earlier you wouldn't say that. And let's face it, again, later they kind of back and forth that a bit. But they're trying to do a bit of character development with him, which is nice. And that leads to who he is in by Star Trek VI. It's kind of that journey goes on.
Yeah.
And this was co-written by Gene L. Coon, who is one of the big Star Trek writers. So, so anyway, the plan is now, Kirk says, right, well, what you've got to do is reject him. But I love him. What? Come off it.
You don't love him. You've just met him. Just because he's bought you a fancy pink dress, you don't fall in love with him.
We do know that in Star Trek, if it's a love story of the week.
And it's a used dress from one of Mudd's women.
Exactly.
He hasn't even got you a new dress.
Like, if it's a love story of the week, then yes, you do instantly fall in love and are willing to give up your career and everything. So it's not uncommon that this happens. but that's what she's got to do. She's got to reject him. And a combination of her rejecting him and Kirk making a speech about how great humanity is brings down the shield enough that Spock can destroy the power source, which is the temple. And that's how you defeat a god. And there's quite a good bit where Kirk says, you know, we've outgrown you. Like, we used to have need of this sort of thing, but... And it is undermined a bit by him going, one god's good enough for us. Like, shush.
Yeah,
but that's the 1960s American.
Yeah, I do have a feeling that's a network note. But so we'll let that go. But yeah, the idea of we've moved on, you know, we're meeting other species. We don't need to worship people just because they have different powers to us. That's a really cool idea.
Which is the message that it was giving. Like, he's obviously had to put the line in that one god is enough, thank you. That's all we need.
Well, I'm wondering. Yeah. Sorry.
So I'm saying that's probably network, but the main message is that we don't need gods.
Yeah, it is. Anything.
Well, that's why I'm wondering, because it's like, it reminded me of this story which Graham Chapman used to say about Python. He said it's like, so the first series, they just didn't watch us. We weren't costing them a lot of money, and we were doing all right on the ratings, so they just left us be. Then we got a bit of a bump in the ratings and maybe moved to Beavis and whatever it was. And they watched an episode, and then suddenly they got notes like, you know, you said fuck five times in this. You can only have two fucks. And they go, he goes, once you said it, you said it. You may as well just say it. Fuck. You
know, yeah,
like,
yeah.
And it feels like almost like they've seen this episode go, oh, there's a lot of anti-religious stuff in there. You've got to say this one good as God as part of it, and you can keep the rest. It's like, oh.
Yeah.
And well, I think one very was probably of the mindset. It's like, well, I get my message out. I don't give a shit about that one line.
Well, that's it. Like with Python, Python started on B2, and when B2 first started, it was very experimental and meant to be sort of, whoa, it's out there. BBC Two wasn't under the same rules as BBC One, and it was going to be more in with the kids. And
even up until the 90s, you had Fist of Fun, which even the name alone is for a wank, and like it's just rude stuff. Yeah, to finish, and it was on a Sunday lunchtime because again, didn't cost them much. No one was watching it, and was BBC Two on a Sunday. Who gave a shit? Now they watch everything, and they're kind of so, you know, so careful and everything.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure Dennis Pennis used to get shown on a lunchtime on a Sunday.
Dave used to be on the
one. The other how the hell is that on lunchtime?
It was the Sunday show or something he was on.
Yeah.
After Fist of Fun, it was the next one. Yeah.
Check out Dennis Pennis, anyone who's listening, if you haven't.
The best one is at the Oscars with Demi Moore. Demi, would you consider keeping your clothes on in a movie if it was for artistic reasons?
Yeah.
And having watched this year's The Substance, the answer is no.
No.
Woohoo! Sorry, I mean, Shameless.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen The Substance, it's a great film. It was so much fun. It's a long time. I go to the cinema a lot. We all go to the cinema a lot. And it's not often that an entire cinema is in fits of laughter at the same time.
Yes.
And that movie did it.
Just, it was one of them where everyone was just coming out, just going, what on earth? I mean, it's not often you see a film that, you know, so I like to think, you know, we're all fairly cine literate, and we've seen. It's difficult to surprise or shock people who are quite well versed in pop culture and cinema and television, but The Substance, whoa.
And I will say, for anyone who thinks like I'm maybe going against my morals here and all these comments I've been making about kind of sexism stuff by going Demi Moore nude, where hey, any nudity, everyone nude, I don't care, you know, men, women, like, yeah, you know, I'm not being sexist about this. Like, nudity should just be okay, like for consenting adults watching a film, shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, if you want to, check your BBFC certificates and you will be fine.
BBFC, isn't that a category on Pornhub? Sorry, no, that's BBC, never mind.
BBC. Big I'll black, talk to you about that later.
Big black.
Right, I see. Okay. I was going to mention something else, but I'll talk to you about it off air. Okay, so yeah, that's pretty much where we wrap up. Like, the Apollo decides, you know what? The other gods were right when they ascended to a higher plane of thing. I'm off.
I'm going
to
go join them.
And he's away, he's gone. Which Mariner referenced, she said, didn't Kirk get rid of them all and they all ascended?
But the effect for where they destroy his temple has been changed.
Yes,
it believe has. It or not. Because it's an awful new effect.
I mean,
fit in with 60s, but it is actually late 90s.
Yeah. And it finishes on a bit of a grace note. Like, Kirk does talk about, well, you know, it was a bit of a bugger, but there is a sadness to the fact that these gods have passed out of our world, and you know, it is a nice ending. I had a lot of fun with this episode.
It
is. It's one of the Great classic episode.
It's not sort of a tier one classic. Like, it's not Space Seed, Mirror Mirror, Sitting on the Edge Forever, Trouble with Tribbles. But it's, yeah, but it's just below that. Yeah, it's just below that sort of level in terms of, I think the Green Hand makes it very iconic.
Yeah.
I think it's also one of those things whereby part of the, sort of like, it is quite fun when you kind of like, see the different attitudes of the time and you can have a bit of a laugh. It's enjoyable from that point of view, not saying that it's right, but it's like, oh my God, we talk like that, and it kind of shows you that we've come a long way. And yeah, I think it's kind of enjoyable for that to have.
What's most surprising is you, when you get stuff like that in Star Trek, which is known for how progressive it was, you think, oh my God, what must some of the other shows have been like?
Yeah. And again, it's a compliment to Star Trek, really, the fact that this does stick out. Like, you know, like we're saying, Annie, there's usually a few bits like this where you go, oh, that's not ideal, but they're generally bending in the right direction. This whole episode is wall to ceiling with sexism, basically. What are you gonna do?
So next week we'll be back for the next episode of Lower Decks and whatever rabbit hole that sends us down. In the meantime, you can get in touch with us. We're retrekpod@gmail.com. Search for Retrek on all the socials except X. Oh, there we are. We're at Retrekpod and the rest of it for Blue Sky. So
yeah, just have Retrekpod when you're on Blue Sky. Yeah.
And then the bit that comes after it.
While we were talking because I forgot.
There we go. And yes, Elliot's got Retrek Model Studios on YouTube.
We will be back up and running next week. I move on Friday. Finally moving. Woo!
Yeah. And Dr. Squee, what have we got going on the Dr. Squee show?
Well, we've got a bit of a double. First of all, tomorrow we're going to have an interview with Pancreatic Cancer UK alongside, why is my mind suddenly blanking now? I go to say it's a sports broadcaster. It is, of course. Oh my God, why am I interviewed him earlier today? Sorry about
Gary Lineker.
No, fuck's sake.
Alan Shearer.
Gaza.
It's someone who's been working for like decades in sports journalism. I don't know why.
Gaza's been working for decades in sports journalism.
Lineker. Well, okay, even more decades. It's not Lineker. It's
Jimmy Hill.
It's with of course it's Steve Ryder. So I don't know why their name wouldn't come to me. Steve Ryder. He's worked for the BBC, ITV, Sky. He talks all about talks a bit about his journalism, but also a current campaign that Pancreatic Cancer UK is running around bladder incontinence and guys going to football. And like there's a huge percentage of guys who don't go to football because they're worried about bladder weakness. So it's really great. But he does talk about his kind of career in sports as well, including one time he got caught short when he was recording. So that was kind of fun. But also you and me are going through Twin Peaks of Return. We had a bit of internet issues when we were recording the other day. So
yeah,
we're doing
my bad.
So we're doing all the remaining episodes on Sunday from 11 for 2 hours. We're going to do a special to round off the series.
There we go. And thanks for trekking with us this time. We will see you next time on the Retrek.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Drag off, gods.